All right, welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. The Orange mission is to unite Canadians around the core problem we face as a country, which is broken money. And this podcast is a place for Canadians to have conversations about how fixing the money fixes Canada. My name's Nick, and I'm speaking to Alan in this episode. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with others or donating at CanadianOrangeParty.com to support the podcast. Current block height is 925,278. Hash rate is sitting at 1,144 exahashes per second. And one Canadian peso currently buys you 814 satoshis. Alan, welcome and thank you for being here.
Wow, 814, eh?
Seems weird to say. What a bargain right now.
Yeah, I know. But it's like that's all it gets you, eh? It's 814 sat one measly dollar. It's unbelievable.
It is. And getting more mind-boggling as time goes on.
I mean, imagine the day where it gets you like 100 or 50 sats or something. You know, it's like...
Or one sat. Maybe one day people won't even give you a sat for a dollar because the dollar's worthless. That'll be an interesting time. Yeah. My wife has given your book to several friends and pastors at her church. So thank you for taking time to write it. I just wanted to say that right off the bat because... It takes time, energy, and perseverance to write a book. It also takes someone with meaningful enough information to share to write one. So thank you for doing that. I'm super excited for this conversation with you today, and I'm grateful for your time. So I'll take a second to frame up the question, and my hope is then to just listen to you share your perspective for 30 to 60 minutes. So Canada's in a pretty bad place right now. Lots of problems, lots of suffering and despair. I don't think anyone would argue that if they just go out and look at the world around them within Canada. And I don't think most Canadians have taken the time to do their homework in understanding money. And so many people out there, many Canadians, really can't imagine how sound money changes society for the better. They might not even know what sound money is, frankly. And so my hope is that conversations like this offer a glimpse of hope and maybe a motivation for Canadians who haven't started that journey yet to learn about sound money and to play a part in ushering in the restoration of sound money in Canada. And my question to you is that from your viewpoint, from where you're sitting in life, what you're doing with your time, what you find motivation in, how does a return to sound money change Canada for the better? And that's a really broad question, so you can go anywhere you please. I'll follow along, reflect on points, and ask more questions as the opportunity comes up, but the floor is yours. How does a return to sound money change Canada for the better?
That's the question, right? That's the question. And I think we can't really answer the question until we wrestle with the reality of what that transition might look like. Okay, it's impossible to predict the details of it. Now, I could come on here and I could say a return to sound money would bring a utopia and the world would be so great and, you know, it would fix everything and all that kind of stuff. And it would certainly fix a lot of things. And the world would be better long term with a return to sound money. But transitioning from where we are now to that might be an ugly thing. It might be a short-term or medium-term ugly thing. And the reason I say that is because I really like how Lawrence Lepard frames it in his book, The Big Print. I don't know if you've read The Big Print or not.
I haven't yet.
Yeah, so in his book, The Big Print, he frames it in terms of an alcoholic. And he says that fiat money is like alcohol and our societies are alcoholics. And, you know, or any addiction, pick any addiction. It doesn't have to be alcohol, but you can't just cold turkey quit an addiction like that. You know, for some people, well, maybe some people can, but for a hardcore alcoholic, it might even kill them if they cold turkey quit. You know, in my own life, my grandpa, he drank a ton of alcohol. He wasn't like an angry alcoholic, but he was definitely an alcoholic. And there was a time in his life, later in his life, where the doctor said, if you quit, you will die. If you quit cold turkey, the withdrawals from this thing will kill you. So he had to That's what rehab is. Rehab is a way for people who are addicted to substances to quit those substances in a way where it's healthy and they can wean off those things and become clean. Fiat money's like that. If we just tomorrow quit cold turkey fiat money, there would be a mess in society. And so there needs to be a plan to transition from this system to that system. Now, do I think that's going to happen in that way? Are we going to have a fiat rehab in society where we're able to lessen the withdrawal symptoms and help people get to this new system and the benefits of it? Probably not. That might be wishful thinking. Now, with that said, here's what I think transition to sound or what like if I could snap my fingers today and skip all that and just go straight to the benefits. One of the struggles, the biggest struggles for people today in Canada, not just Canada, United States too and other countries, but Canada faces this, I think, in a more elevated way is obviously affordability, work, finding work. People are saying we might go into a recession. I mean, aren't we in one already? Doesn't it kind of feel re like a recession already?
Feels like
It's
we've been
like,
receding for a while, put it that way.
yeah, we have, and everyone's scared of a recession. And I'm like, dude, we're in a recession. Jobs are very scarce. Unemployment is it, real. Unemployment is high, right? I mean, the numbers. I don't really trust the numbers coming out of the Bank of Canada or the Fed or any of these central banks. They're skewing the numbers, they're fudging the numbers to make it look better than it is. But when people are working two and three jobs and they're still not getting ahead, that's a problem. That's a problem. And so what I see happening under a sound money standard is people are going to actually be able to save money again.
What a revolution.
I know. I mean, it just seems so basic, right? Like your grandma's wisdom, back in the day was when you make money, save some of it, put it away for a rainy day. And that made sense at one point in time. But now it doesn't. When I got married in 2011, we did the Dave Ramsey financial peace thing at church, and we followed that, and it was fine in the short term. We didn't get into any consumer debt, and we saved money, and we, were wise with budgeting. But that worked against us because 5, 6 years later, that saved money that we had didn't get us what it used to get us. And so we were actually falling behind, in a sense, financially, and it worked against us. So we live in a world where saving money is not the wise thing to do anymore. And that sounds crazy because it is crazy. Money should hold its value at least, right? At the very least, it should hold its value. You should be able to put money away in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years later, pull that money out and at least get the same amount of stuff that you would have got back then. If not more, right?
I've been
That would
starting
be.
to create a delineation of just not calling fiat currency money. I'm just building the habit of calling it currency. And creating a sharp line in the sand to say currency is used as a medium of exchange, but it doesn't actually fulfill the properties of money as a unit of account, medium of exchange, and store of value. And if it's not a store of value, it's not good money. So let's just call it what it is. Currency is a great way to pay for your day-to-day fiat expenses if you live in a fiat world. But when you save, like you said, when the currency breaks or is manipulated or is flat out fraudulent, saving in currency punishes you. And that's really been the story for the past, 50 years, specifically in Canada, more broadly, obviously since 1971. But yeah, I just wanted to interject there a note. I think for me, it's been a really good exercise because when I'm talking to people, naming them different things usually brings up the question of, well, why are you, what do you mean currency and money? Isn't currency money? And then it like opens the door to say, well, let me explain to you why currency is bad, is a bad form of money. So sorry, continue.
Excuse me. I used to be in the habit of saying political currency units. Maybe I should get back into that habit because that really gets people's eyebrows up. They're like, "What are you talking about? Was it? No, what was it? Political?
I think
Yeah,
Lou
political.
Broyles called it that, and I think it's good.
Luke Broyles came up with that one. And I remember going to the store, the grocery store, and I was paying, and I said, "How many political currency units is this?" Because I was looking to get a price, right? And it was like a teenage girl, right? She's like looking at me like, "You're weird, you know?" I'm like, "How much does this cost?" And she scans it and she's like, "Oh, it's this much." I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know. But yeah, calling it something like that certainly gets people's attention. So anyways, in terms of hard money, it would bring back common sense, fiscal, financial wisdom. Here's the thing. In the Dave Ramsey course I took at church, he used a lot of Bible verses. I don't know if you've read any of Dave Ramsey's stuff or did any of his courses back in the day, but a lot of his material has Bible principles in it. And they're not wrong. They're right. The problem is the paradigm. So he's applying biblical principles in a fiat paradigm. And that's where the disconnect is. Because, like you said, fiat currency is presupposed to be money when it's not. So when we apply money principles from the Bible to fiat currency, we're not actually doing a faithful job of applying those passages because those passages exist in a hard money paradigm, right? So when the Bible talks about money, we need to understand it's, you know, we can't take our 21st century fiat presuppositions and apply it to those passages because those passages don't know what that paradigm is. That's a foreign paradigm to the passages, if you follow me.
I do, and I agree.
So in the Bible, the financial paradigm is hard money. It's silver and gold primarily. And so when the Bible says anything about money, like you read in the Proverbs and maybe it gives you some wisdom about, you know, whatever, putting some away or you know, there's that passage that talks about a little by little saving and so forth. It's telling you that in a hard money paradigm, and it makes sense in a hard money paradigm. Makes total sense, but in the fiat paradigm, it doesn't. So that's where the disconnect is. And that's where we have this education gap now, not just in broader society, but in the church too. There's an education gap about money because we're presupposing things into the scripture that the scripture has no knows nothing about. It's an alien context. And so, first and foremost, we need to educate people, which is sort of the idea of podcasts like this, and why I wrote a book, and why others are doing things to fill that gap. But that gap is so big, we need so much more education. And one of the problems is the education system, which is the behemoth of education. I mean, we're trying to get people on the periphery. Hey, you know, learn about this, learn about this. But when you're going to school, you're not learning anything about this. And so, and I think that's on purpose, obviously, because if they taught real financial education in public schools, then it would undermine the entire system of government and everything that goes with that. So everything would change under a hard money standard. Everything, government, education, healthcare, justice, the courts, policing. I don't know that there's anything in society that wouldn't be radically changed by a shift to a hard money standard. Why do I say that? Because money is that technology or tool humans use to store our time and our energy. And we are time and energy. I mean, what else are we, right? We're human beings made in God's image, but he created us in a world of a linear time. And so he says, here's some time. You must spend it. You must use it. We have no choice. We can't save time. You know, people say, oh, I saved time doing this. No, you didn't. You just spent time doing something else, right? You can't put time in a savings account and then at the end of your life say, oh, I banked 2 years. I'd like to use that now, right? You can't do that. And so if money is the representation of our time and energy, then the kind of money we use is going to affect us on a deep, deep personal level. Very deep. And so it changes everything. If you're working for sound money, it changes incentives, it changes your mindset, it changes how you think about today, it changes how you think about tomorrow. And that changes everything. So it'll affect literally every facet of society in positive ways. But of course, there's second order effects. And like I said, hard money is not going to fix humanity. It's not going to fix everything, but it's going to at least put us back on a level where common sense is common again, and we can operate from a healthy, more godly paradigm about today and the future. Because right now, the time preferences are all jacked up, and we see that fake money. I like to say it this way: when you debase the money, you debase the man. And I know that might sound controversial. That might sound like maybe too harsh, but it's
I
true.
don't think it is. I think it's
Yeah.
fully accurate if you actually understand where you're coming from and the context for that, which most people don't. So the radicalness might come from them just not a, you know, radical is comes from the Latin word of root. If you understand things to the root, you know, you can, if you change the root, you change the radical for everything that grows above it. And I think everything is subordinate to money. Money forms the foundational incentive layer for society. And so if you change the money from one based on lies to one based on truth, you fundamentally shift the incentive of all of society and how everything's built, all institutions, all behaviors, to one of truth and reality and integrity. And yeah, I think we just most people just don't understand how fundamentally broken the money is and how that brokenness affects their day-to-day life, right? They might see groceries getting more expensive or fuel getting more expensive. But there's this tacit acceptance that this is just how things are based on the lack of understanding that this is actually designed and it doesn't need to be this way. That's the big disconnect. Yeah, it's just so fascinating that when you go down deep enough and you see how broken it is, it really becomes this, frankly, surreal experience to see the brokenness in real time and all the suffering that creates, and the lack of desire to change things because people accept that that is just the reality of how things are. And back to what you said about when you debase the money, when you debase the currency, you debase the man. I recently made this connection of, you know, fiat currency is immoral money. It lacks morals. It's based on a fraudulent lie. And immoral money demoralizes individuals who base their life on that money. And I've never used the word demoralized with the connection to morality, but that's literally what I can't unsee that now. I see people being demoralized, being doing really just immoral behaviors. Because it's a trickle-down effect of them being nudged by immoral money. And it's really nasty when you actually, it's really dark when you see it for what it is. And right now we have a project with the Canadian Orange Party about educating people about inflation, the truth, the nasty, raw, unfiltered, you know, like disturbing truth about inflation. So if people go to endinflationcanada.com, we have a couple pamphlets that we're A/B testing that we want to print thousands of and hand them out at in communities, at churches, with families, friends. And I really think it's, you know, the government, like you said, the government, the current fiat regime and powered government is not going to push a sound money standard. It's just, that's not where it's going to come from. All the incentives point to them doubling down and protecting this insane power that they have been granted without consent, but just by the fact that that's the way it's always been for as long as people alive right now have currently been alive. And so it has to come from an intolerant minority of aware people who refuse to accept the evil propagating and shine a light of truth on what's actually happening. So yeah, it's nasty, but now we have hope. So
yeah, and that's as you're speaking there, I kept thinking of hope and how when people have hope for the hope is really something that's future oriented, right? Nobody hopes for the past. You can't hope for the past. The past is gone, and it is what it is. And maybe you might hope for the present, but it's not really hope. It's the present, right? People hope for what is in the future, for a better tomorrow. They think, okay, today, or sorry, they think tomorrow can be better than today, and so they keep going. But if the money is giving you a signal, and it might even just be for most people, it's probably a subconscious signal, right? Because if it was a conscious signal, then everybody would be up in arms about it. It's like a subconscious signal to everybody who's using this fiat paper, or in our context, plastic. It's literally plastic. I got a $5 bill recently, and it was literally the ink in the plastic was rubbed off. And it was see through, and I could see it. It looked like Saran wrap or something.
Literally nothingness.
Yeah, it's like just a sheet of clear plastic, and I'm like, this is what we work for. It's insane. So people get this subconscious signal, and of that tomorrow, there's no hope for tomorrow. That tomorrow I'm going to have a harder time than I have today. And what that does to individuals is it strips them of hope. And then when people are stripped of hope, they're demoralized, like you said. Now I can't unsee that, because I never made that connection till now. So when you're demoralized, well, what's the point of being moral then, right? It loses your life, almost loses all meaning, and you start to do crazy things, which is what we see in our society today. Is just you know, I think about clown world. People talk about clown world. Well, yeah, if you've ever gone to a circus, you know what the clowns are like. They just do wacky things, and a lot of, you know, some people have a fear of clowns. I don't know if you've ever heard of this or anything, but I have some friends that I grew up with that were deathly afraid of clowns. And I always thought, what's so scary about clowns, right? But if you really think about it, clowns represent sort of the like humanity stripped of all meaning and purpose, right? They just sort of, they're in this tent and they're doing wacky stuff and their faces are painted and they just, their movements are awkward and weird and don't have any real meaning or anything. Like, no offense to any clowns out there, that's your profession. but you get what I'm saying. It's like,
yeah. Life is a like, joke. That's yeah, what it says.
It's like humanity stripped of its seriousness and just whatever, right? So when the world becomes a circus and the clowns are running the show, then what's the point? It's just decadence and immorality and foolishness and folly, and it's a demoralization of the human man and the human woman. And so
use clown money, create clown world.
Right, exactly. Whether you realize it or not. And that's the scary part, is most people don't realize this, right? I mean, you got guys. Look, I seen an ad yesterday for it's not a speed bag, but it's like this thing that you blow up, and it has a suction cup, and you can put it on your wall, and you can punch it, and it's sort of like a speed bag for boxing. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool product. My kids are in boxing and stuff like that, so I thought maybe they would like that. And so I clicked on the ad, and I'm scrolling through, and then I X'd it out. A few days later, the same company ad comes up. And this time it was an ad of, the top part had, which father would you like? The top ad had like a guy sitting with his son, and then the son like waved his hand in front of the screen, and then they were both wearing makeup, and it was like the trans thing. And then underneath, it had a video of a guy with his son using their product, punching the bag, and like, come on, you could do it, son. And it was like motivate. And I was like, dang, that's a based ad, man. Like, I
More
think
of
I'm gonna,
that.
yeah. I'm like, I think I'm gonna buy this product just because of that ad. Yeah, I was already thinking of it. But then I saw that and I was like, oh shoot. So I'm like, you know what you do, right? You click the comments. Let me see if other people. And every comment was like, I'm not buying this. We want a dad supporting this. And I'm like, what? This is insane. Look, I have kids, I have sons. And let me tell you, like bringing them to boxing, we have a punching bag in the basement now, punching with them, sparring with them. These kind of things are life-giving. These kind of things, they make sense. This kind of stuff, bonding with your sons, doing physical things like that. This is good. This is good for their mind. This is good for their body. This is good for their soul. And people are crapping on that. And like, why do I bring this up? I bring this up because of what you just said. Clown money creates clown world. And clown world does weird stuff and then praises the weird stuff. And not only praise, now here's like where Romans 1 comes in. It not only praises the weird stuff, it condemns the good stuff.
It idolizes the weird.
Yeah. So it's one thing to say I'm weird or to do weird stuff privately, right? It's another thing to publicly condemn that which is good for that which is evil. And that's what we're seeing today.
And I think there has to be a distinction made between weird and evil, because I feel like we're conflating the two a little bit. It's okay to be weird. You're wearing orange glasses to block the blue light from affecting your circadian health. To most people who have no idea about circadian health, which is the vast majority of people, you look weird. To people who save their time in internet money with a fixed cap of 21 million, we're weird. But I think there's a big delineation to talk about, castrating kids and calling it weird. It's not weird, it's evil.
Right.
We need
That's
to call
right.
it for
Yeah.
what it is, because if we,
Weird is subjective,
weird
right?
is subjective, exactly. And it doesn't place judgment on good or bad, but I think some things need to be honestly judged as good or bad for what they are. And we can't just conflate that with weirdness, because it's like, be okay being weird, I'm good with that. It doesn't mean be okay being evil or doing evil shit. So there, yeah, that's important, I think.
Good point. Good point. So what I meant by weird was evil. So forgive my miss speaking. But yeah. So anyways, all that to say, evil money creates evil incentives, and then the human heart is already so inclined to evil that it's almost like feeding a beast, right? It's like, don't be surprised when you feed the dog and he eats the meat, right? I mean, that's just what dogs do. And so if you feed humans constant bad incentives with evil I incentives, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? And then, I mean, there's some of us who are fighting against it, but for the most part, human history demonstrates that the masses are going to just go along to get along for as long as needed until something breaks. I come from Romania. I was born there and came to Canada when I was like, I don't know, I was like 10 or 11 months, so I was a baby. I don't remember anything about Romania, but my parents do, and I've heard stories. And we came here in 1989 or 88, and so communism was still a thing when we left. It fell a year later, but it was a thing when we left. And the history of Romania is an interesting one. And if you watch the fall of communism, I mean, you can just YouTube it. YouTube, Communism Falls Romania, and there's videos of this stuff. And this went on for so long. Communism went on for so long in this country, but it came to a point where something broke. And when it broke, the people rose up and they overthrew the dictator. And on Christmas Day, The army arrested him and they executed him, and you can watch the video. I don't recommend. I mean, you don't really see anything, but it's all public knowledge.
Good to know history.
Yeah, but what that history demonstrates, at least for me, what it demonstrated for me was people will go along to get along way longer than you might be comfortable with. Way longer than you might be comfortable with. And then by the time they've had enough, like a caged dog, right? They lash out, and it's very, very rarely peaceful. Very rarely.
And they rarely lash out at the actual root cause, right? All they have to be given is something to lash out to, is for someone to point at something and call it the boogeyman, and people are just primed to lash out. That's my big fear right now, is everyone is in such a bad place, mentally, physically, spiritually, they're suffering. They're literally primed to be told, this is the boogeyman, this is the problem. And we know full well that the government understands the propaganda playbook very deeply. This is how they run it. And so I think people telling the truth is like a counter propaganda immune system to at least counter the propaganda that's being put out there and give people a compelling choice that where they at least have truth to decide from, right? Because the propaganda gives them sometimes optionality, but neither are truthful. And I just, when you were talking before about this whole idea of the money that people use creates the foundational incentives that kind of nudges them through life, whether they acknowledge it or not. It's almost like a lazy river, right? The current of this lazy river is something we are all participating in. And there's the direction to the current, there's a speed to the current, and there's the destination where this lazy river leads to. And in a world where we're all using this fraudulent currency that is stealing from us unknowingly, the current of that river is towards high time preference, debauchery, and evil things, because the foundational incentives point to there. That's just where it goes to. And so to be a good person living virtuously while sitting on a lazy river of evil current is very difficult. There's a lot of friction there. And the imagery I get when it comes to switching to sound money is we instantly switch from this lazy river bringing us down a bad path of doing terrible things with a high time preference and really having zero hope. It's all filled with nihilism, right? If tomorrow is worth less, like worthless and worthless, I kind of made that connection where it's like, yeah, if the money is becoming worth less towards worthlessness, tomorrow is worth less, then you just basically do whatever you want today because tomorrow doesn't matter. And that is just a path to doing stupid things that are not good for your health, that are not good for society. And the minute we port over to sound money, we instantly get put on this new river with a new speed of current and a new direction. That is incentivizing virtuous behaviors that lower time preference, that nudge people towards caring about the world around them because they have a world to live for, right? Creating families, finding spiritual peace by actually spending time building self-awareness and learning about like what is the path to a good life. Most people are just in such on the lazy river of fiat currency, people are forced into survival mode such that the aspirations that bring them joy or the things that create meaning in life aren't options because I have to make my rent for tomorrow and I'm constantly working more and struggling more. And this makes no sense. And the sad part is, I think people say, well, I'm just bad with money. That's the default, right? Which is super unfortunate. And helping people understand it's not that you're bad with money, you're just using bad money. And there is an option, to just be able to restore a value for your life, which is switch to honest money built on truth. And I think the one, you know, if you know history, sometimes understanding history can make you a bit, at least it does for me, make me very pessimistic because like these, they're all bad stories. Like few of them end well. None of them have so far, but none of those stories involve the form of money that couldn't be co-opted and manipulated. So the one hope is like we are literally get to rewrite history, maybe for the first time ever, and not follow the same script because we have something that radically disrupts the script, which is money that can't be co-opted. And that's a pretty significant thing.
Yeah, it's a paradigm shift that we are living in that I think our children and grandchildren will read about, right? And that'll be their history. And I don't know if it was in the Bible and Bitcoin book or maybe another book I wrote, but I or maybe it was a Twitter post, I don't know. But I've said somewhere before that I hope and pray for a day where we don't talk about Bitcoin anymore because it's just the money, right? It's just like unnecessary to talk about Bitcoin in the way we talk about it because it's just the default now. In that world, we could talk about other things and be productive and do other things and have a more meaning in our lives. But for now, this education gap, like I said, is so big. But yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I am optimistic on a macro scale in terms of the whole of history because I'm a Christian, so I believe that Jesus wins and that peace will win and the Prince of Peace will reign forever. But the way we get there is going to be a bumpy road. And in terms of money, like you said, it's always been a bumpy road of these cycles of like prosperity and then corruption and prosperity and corruption and prosperity and corruption. And now, and that's because of just the physical nature of the money, right? I mean, gold is great. I'm not a hater of gold, but gold can be easily, it can be easily, what's the word I'm looking for? Debased. Can add other metals to it. You could clip those coins, and rulers have found ways to do that. Bitcoin, there really is no coin clipping with Bitcoin, right? You can't clip a coin. You can't debase Satoshis. You can't take a Bitcoin, 100 million Satoshis, and like sneak in 50 million ETH. Whatever the I don't know what ETH what it's called if they have like I don't think ETH has like a Satoshi. What do they call the denominations? I don't know. Anyways, you can't sneak in 0.5 ETH and 0.5 Bitcoin and say, here's a Bitcoin, And so yeah, we're living in a paradigm shift. Paradigm shifts are such that it's hard to mentally comprehend because it's something we've never really had that we have now. And how that affects humanity on a grand scale is still being played out today. How we get there, nobody knows. Do we get there? Nobody knows. But we have this thing and it is changing the financial landscape, and we have this paradigm shift technology money at the same time existing with this fiat currency regime, this beast, and they're sort of conflicting with each other. They're bumping into each other and they're being conflated with one another. So how this works out is going to be fun to watch. I mean, we're watching it play out now with Wall Street, Bitcoin coming into institutional adoption. What does that look like? What's the next step? How does this proliferate from here? So I do think this roller coaster is just getting started. I do think we win in the end, but it's going to be a bumpy ride. There's a chart from Weimar, Germany. Have you ever seen that chart of
I
the gold?
have the whipsaw chart.
Yeah, with the volatility spikes. I expect something like that on our way to transitioning to a sound money standard. In the future, our kids will look at that chart and go, wow, that all you had to do was buy Bitcoin and do nothing, right? And you could have been very, very wealthy. But then we'll have to step in and say, well, kids, have a seat. We want to tell you some war stories here about how this chart that looks like this, if you zoom in, was much different and required a lot of conviction, and it was very mentally that your conviction was tested and you had to be very mentally strong, and we'll tell them the war stories of Bitcoin. But
Yeah,
for
I think
living in it. And we have the privilege to live in it. And I think that should be the
agreed.
perspective. The perspective should be not one of doom and gloom, but of, hey, we get the privilege to live through this. Like, this is a tremendous privilege. We should be happy and we should be joyful that we get to live through this crazy time of history. And if in the end we lose, that's fine. Because the way I see it is, I'd rather go down with the moral ship than to go up with the immoral ship, because the immoral ship, even if it goes up in terms of whatever metric you're using, in the end it's going to destroy your soul. And so, like Jesus said, what does a man gain if he gains the world and loses his soul? And so this is the way I view fiat money. I'm not a Bitcoiner because I want number go up. I'm a Bitcoiner because I don't want to lose my soul. I don't want to gain the world and lose my soul. And so now let me just really quickly tell you what I mean by that.
You don't
Bitcoin
have to
is
do it
not.
quick. We're here. We got 19 more minutes. You can take all of them
Okay.
to say this.
I'm not saying Bitcoin saves my soul. Okay. Let me just make that clear because people will say, I know they'll say, oh, well, you're being idolatrous. No, I'm not saying Bitcoin saves my soul. I'm saying that Bitcoin is honest money and fiat is not. So therefore, as a Christian, I must choose the honest one. I mean, it's really that simple for me. When I was studying Bitcoin, it really that was the delineation. That was the fork in the road was, okay, now I know. Before I didn't know. But when I know, when I figured it out, when I was educated, that fiat is immoral and Bitcoin is honest. Now I have a choice. Where do I go? Well, according to scripture, I should go with the honest one. But the honest one is the one that is more controversial. It's the one that is more volatile, air quotes. It's the one that has the least, maybe adoption. Fiat is the one that everyone uses, everyone understands. It's, well, not everyone understands, but it's the popular one. Well, I got to go with the honest one because I have to be principled. And so that's the logic here is Bitcoin honest, fiat dishonest. And if we're going to be principled, we have to go with the honest one. And if the honest one sinks, then it sinks.
Doing the right thing and being honest often is inconvenient in
Yeah.
my life. I've found that. And so this is kind of par for the course, right? It's inconvenient to revise how you think of your entire world. It's inconvenient to acknowledge that for your entire life as an adult human, you've been stolen from. It's very inconvenient to accept that. It's very painful. It can be angering. There's all these phases that people go through. It's very inconvenient to adopt a form of money that hasn't yet been accepted in society. But the idea that doing what's right and being honest and truthful is inconvenient makes it such that it actually, if you are a person of integrity, it actually isn't a choice. Like for you, you say you had a choice, but based on your core value set, you actually didn't have a choice. The choice, there was a decision imposed on you. Because you've already decided to live in a certain way and to live in integrity with what you've pre-decided, you had something imposed on you that you couldn't actually forget about. And I think what I find interesting is hearing people's individual stories of how they went, because this idea that society is going to shift from fiat currency that is fraudulent and based on a lie to money with integrity that's built on truth and supports freedom. Society transitioning is going to be messy and bumpy. But I think sometimes you can take a microscopic view of how individuals have navigated that, because I know many of them. I'm one of them. You're one of them. And it's interesting how so few of them have found it to be super bumpy. Like there's uncomfortable times, but in general, it's actually very joyful to move in the direction of something you truly align deep in your soul with and know is the truth. No, this is fully formed. This is not a flighting fad. This is not crypto. This is sound money that is global, open, borderless, and bound by energy. This is fully baked. There's nothing to do. I can anchor my ship to this, and I can align my family with this because this is not a, this is permanent. And yeah, I just find it interesting that, this. I think it's an Ayn Rand quote. You can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. And so I think the
Right.
people who are most disconnected from reality and most hesitant to be curious and look at truth will be the ones who will have the most bumpy journey to this imposed reality that is not a negotiation, that is where we're going. The more you resist it, the more suffering you will have. Those who have the most to gain from the lie and corruption of fiat will be the ones who have the most painful return to reality, right? It's like the more you float up from reality, the more reality smacks you up when you fall back down to it. And it is not a permanent thing. Reality will impose itself. And so I think the bumpiness is going to be stemming from the fact that our culture and society and institutions, frankly, have veered so far from reality that they will be smacked up in a real nasty way when they return to reality. But the beauty is the individuals have their own choice and path. And if they've reconnected with reality, they can insulate and have enough capacity to help others who haven't yet insulated so that the chaos and damage of fiat imploding doesn't actually spill over into the people who made the right choice earlier on. And I think that's where I see so many Bitcoiners having this desire to give and to contribute and to shine the light of truth on all the darkness is like they want to help the people they care about. They might already have enough sats to protect themselves, to insulate from the fiat chaos, but they also care about other people. And now they have the time and bandwidth and energy because they're not being stolen from to actually make a difference in the world. And I think that's what gives me Bitcoiners give me the most hope, even more than Bitcoin. Because without humans, without Bitcoiners, without individuals, Bitcoin doesn't really do much. So it's really exciting. It does seem like the reward for living through this really messed up, confused time is that we've been blessed with sound money that we can use as our shield from the darkness, but also the reward for being part of this inflection point in history, which will go back in history as being such a weird, strange case study. But in the moment, it just seems like a really messy time. And so how are, like you're a father, how are you telling stories about this to your kids? Are they confused? Are they impacted by this? In what ways are you seeing them impacted by fiat? And how are you telling stories that make sense of this weird world?
That's a good question. And one that I think, wow.
Sorry, that was a big one to lay on you with 12
Yeah,
minutes left, but
no,
okay.
there's just, I don't know if I've intentionally done this or not, but so I have a young kid, 7, 5, but I've made a choice for my family that. Okay, so this goes back to 2020. So I'm gonna try to fill the 12 minutes if I can here.
If you got bandwidth, we can go over. I'm not pressed,
Okay,
so
because this
yeah.
is very, very meaningful. In 2020, COVID, right? We all know what happened. My wife was a nurse, still is, but you'll. Anyways, things happened. Churches closed. Everyone turned against each other. Pastors were getting arrested. Every Sunday, I was ready to get arrested. Literally. It was a weird time because, and I had young kids back then, younger than they are today, obviously. So, like, if they're 7 now, they were what, 2 then? 2, 3 years old. And I remember waking up every Sunday thinking, man, I can't get arrested. I got 2-year-olds. I'm throwing my wife under the bus. What if I get arrested? How long am I going to, right? So I had this struggle internally of like every Sunday doing my job preaching could get me arrested. So that anxiety was hitting me every day. And then my wife lost her job because she wouldn't get vaccinated in 2021. And so, nurses in Canada made good money. And so that income was gone now. And I realized. I believed it before, but I realized even in a more real sense then that I have to exit this system completely. Like, I mean, completely. Public school, non-negotiable. My kids will never go there. Never. If they get to an age where they choose to go, fine. But as long as I make the decisions, no, not happening. Why? Because that system is wicked and evil. I'll never send my kids there. Number two, the money. Fiat, I can't do it. Bitcoin was the solution, so I adopted Bitcoin. Number three, income, like making money. I could not trust the system to provide for me. I have to make money in a sovereign way. So starting businesses, my wife started a business, I started a business. I work from home now. None of my income actually comes from Canada. It all comes from the United States somehow. Praise God, it happened. But in 2020 and 2021, the decision was made, I have to exit the system completely. And so that brings me to the kids and the parenting part, right? How have I navigated this with them? Well, they just don't know any different, to be honest. I've taught them about money and I still teach them about money. They know what Bitcoin is. You ever see the Tuttle Twins cartoon?
I haven't, but I have a 2-year-old, so it's on the radar of
So
something that we'll look at eventually.
there's a few episodes about Bitcoin. In one episode, there's this song that they sing, "When money is controlled, money is corrupted." It's like a little jingle. When money is controlled, money is corrupted. My kids run around the house singing that. When money is
I
controlled,
love it.
they're singing that. So they're singing, "When money is controlled, money is corrupted." And for me, it's normal in my house. But when cousins come over, it's like, what the heck? This is, my kids are telling them about Tuttle. Like, honestly, their cousins came over around the same age, and my kids are telling them about, when money is controlled, money is corrupted, and they're telling them about Bitcoin, and they're telling them about the government and taxes and how taxation is theft. They're seven.
Amazing.
And so it's just what they know, it's what they've been taught. Now, if they were in public school, then I'm sure I'd be getting calls, right?
Yes.
But so navigating that with the kids has just been, I want this to be normal for them. I want them to grow up with these principles so that when they're my age or when they're 18 or 20, 25, they don't have to have this aha moment. They can just transition from adolescence to adulthood and be productive members of society. My kids already want to start businesses. They're 7 and 5, and they're already they want me to buy them a lawnmower so they can go mow lawns and make money. They want me to my other son, he started a little business making anointing oil, like little bottles of olive oil with some frankincense oil and for anointing and things like that. So they're always I don't know. They're always thinking of ways to be productive. And why? Because it's just what they know. They know that money is something that you earn because you bring value to other human beings. And they're thinking, well, how can I bring value to other human beings in their own way as 7-year-olds?
That's
And
called good
then,
parenting, by the way.
right, yeah. And the best part is they don't want to use that currency. Let me use the proper term. They don't want to use that currency that they're earning to buy stupid things. They want to buy Bitcoin. They want to buy silver coins. They want to invest. And they're 7. I didn't sit down with them and say, "Okay, kids, I'm going to give you a lesson on money now." It's just sort of my life, how I've lived, them observing it and wanting to copy it. Now,
So
that's a good
your
problem.
family's software is determined by you, right? Their behavioral software, their moral software, the operating software of your family comes from you and is absorbed through osmosis by your children. And the only way it can be absorbed is if they're spending time around you. And I feel like the public schools where they go and get viruses uploaded, which you have to unwind when they come home. People think sending your kids to school is convenient, but if you know the truth, and you have an uncommon but grounded perspective in life, it's way less convenient to send them somewhere that you then have to unteach a bunch of stuff about. And it's,
It's way more work than just homeschooling.
yeah, true.
Way more work. I mean, people think homeschooling is like, because they conflate it with the regular schooling where, okay, kids are there for 6 to 8 hours. That means I have to be with them 6 to 8 hours. No, you don't. In public school, they only get like maybe 30 minutes to an hour of one-on-one attention. Maybe. Maybe. If you spend 1 to 2 hours a day with your kids intentionally teaching them, that's more than they get at public school. And then the rest of that time you can do doing other things. I mean, learning isn't just sitting at a table and writing in a notebook or a workbook, or that's not what
That's
learning,
anti-learning, dude.
right? I mean, that's just focus, like, okay, you need your ABCs, so let's go through them. But that can be 30 minutes, an hour and a half a day. That doesn't have to be your whole day, like it is at public school. After that, you can do other things that humans were made to do: play, learning through playing, learning through adventure, going places, doing different things. Kids learn on the go, I think, the best. As you're going, because kids are curious. Hey, Dad, what's that? You're out somewhere. Hey, Dad, what's that? I've never seen that. Or hey, explain this. Or hey, this person said this word. What does that mean? So, like, most learning comes as you're living life, not really when you're sitting down doing a workbook. And kids are naturally curious, so just be open to that. And here, the reality is, sometimes they're too curious for our own good. I tell people, I mean, you said you have a 2-year-old, so I'm sure you're like close to that stage of life where the infinite whys are happening, right? Everything is why. Now, maybe we get annoyed by that in halfway through the day when it's all why. But truthfully, I tell people all the time, if you want to learn, you just have to be like a child and ask why. Ask why. Get to the bottom of things. Get to the presupposition of things. Why? I when I'm doing evangelism with people, and they'll ask questions. They'll say, maybe they'll impose a moral standard. They'll say, "Oh, God said this, and I think that's immoral." Why? Why is that immoral? Why is it wrong to murder? Why is it wrong to be adulterous? Why is it wrong to lie? Why? Don't just assume it's wrong, right? Why? And when you ask the why, you get to the bottom of things. You get to the first principles of things. And if more people asked why about money, I think we would make some progress. Why do you use fiat currency? Why is fiat currency that which you earn? Why does the government tax it
Why
when
is
they can
theft
take it?
baked into the currency?
Why is theft? Why is inflation necessary? People think inflation is just a thing that happens. It's always happening, and it can never not happen. Why? Be like a child.
I'm interviewing Seb Bunny tomorrow. He has said on many podcasts that fiat currency exterminates curiosity. Because people don't have the space or the bandwidth to exercise curiosity. Not only that, but obedience training, which I call public school, has sort of beaten curiosity, intellectually beaten curiosity out of kids, where it's actually not good to be curious because you're told what to learn. You're not actually told why you're learning it. You're not really allowed to ask a lot of questions. You're just here to learn the stuff that the state has said you must learn in the way the state has said you must learn it, which is super unnatural. And if you don't do it, we're going to put you on drugs. To basically blast your system and numb it down to zombie level. And it's actually so disturbing when you see it for what it is. And I think that's part of the reason people don't look at it is to even acknowledge that that reality that I just said could even be remotely possible is so disturbing and dystopian that people are like, there's no way. But everyone gets to the truth eventually. And I think that was a great answer to my hefty question, is you're just living in alignment with the principles you deem most valuable, and your children are adopting that by absorbing that software by osmosis. And I think the beauty in this, the last point I'll make before we close out, when you allow them to live in a world governed by truth, the deception, lie, and evil becomes markedly obvious when they see it. My 2-year-old, we're having to reevaluate all these, events and occasions that are just on the calendar every year. Halloween just passed. My 2-year-old found some of the things on lawns around us very scary. And for the first time in my life, I looked at it for what it was and I saw how disturbing some of these things are. Like literally dolls, baby dolls hanging from trees. The most disturbing, disgusting, evil shit I've ever seen. But until I saw it through my daughter's eyes and saw her be scared of it, I was actually just, it was normalized. I walked into Canadian Tire and I saw literally evil shrines being sold. And I never thought twice about it. I was just like, oh, it's just Halloween. It's just the silliness of Halloween. And the idea that when you live in a world of truth and integrity, you can see evil way quicker. But when you are living in a world underlined by evil money, which dictates the incentives, you literally become so normalized and numbed to the nastiness that it actually becomes the default. And so I think there's something to be said of when you parent your kids and you bring them up with morals, they can see the immoral behavior so much clearer, and they can identify it and not get roped into it. And I think that is such a radical departure from the norm, the fiat norm, but also the necessary antidote to creating a world that is intolerant to the aberrations that are just normalized now. So
Yeah. And the Bible says to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And that is the basic ancient wisdom that we should all be following. Train up the child in the way he should go. Live it. I think it's Deuteronomy, somewhere in Deuteronomy, we're given instructions about how to teach our children. And it literally says, when you're sitting, when you're standing, when you're walking by the roadside, tell your children about the Lord, which just shows you it's just as you go in life. Don't complicate this thing, right? You don't have to have a Harvard curriculum and sit down with them for 6 hours a day. When you're sitting on the way, when you're laying down, when you're walking by the roadside, talk about these things. That's when it's most natural. That's when it's going to happen. So don't try to force it. Just live consistent with your convictions best as you can. We're not perfect. We're going to screw up. Our kids are going to have our screwed up, ways as well. But I think the best thing we can do is just to live consistent with our principles. Be as honest as we can. They'll pick up on that. And to do it when they're young is key. It's a lot harder to try to flip the switch when they're teenagers or when they're adults, So train up a child when he's young, and when he's old, he will not depart from it.
that's some powerful wisdom. Don't tell them how to be. Just be the template.
Show
And
them.
they will learn. Way
Or
better,
for better or
arguably.
worse.
For
For
better
better
or
or worse.
worse, sure. And I think kids will probably reflect things you don't even know you're doing, which is the gift of kids, is they get to, nudge you back into alignment in ways you've strayed that you don't identify. But yeah, just be the example. Arguably, they're gonna learn way more from what you do than what you tell them. So
Oh yeah,
just
100%,
that
100%.
makes that creates maybe some anxiety for some people, but also if you're living in alignment with how you think people should act, it's like there's a lightness to that. It's like I don't have to explicitly teach them all these things. They will just learn by observing me. I just have to have them around me enough so that they can absorb this software and learn it because they're so smart.
Yeah, kids are download machines, right? They will download everything you upload.
Even the things you don't recognize you're uploading.
Exactly, yeah.
Alan, thank you very much for your time. Thank you, everyone listening, for being here with us. I'd like to do another episode in future. I don't know when, but I feel like there's some conversations we could have had that maybe we didn't for time's sake, but I'd like to explore in future. Where can people find your work and connect with you? I'd like to just leave that with people before we close out.
You can find me on Twitter or X at Pastor Coin. I have a website, thebibleandbitcoin.com, where I have all my different books there. I wrote a book on taxes in the Bible, which is my favorite one nobody knows about. But
I'm gonna have to get that one.
I wrote the Bible in Bitcoin, and it just blew up. Didn't expect it to blow up. I'm thankful for that. But then I wrote other books like the taxes book, which I think is way better. Way better than the Bible and Bitcoin, but nobody cares about it because it's not Bitcoin. But anyways, you can find all my work there, thebibleandbitcoin.com. And if you find a book on there you like, it's also on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon as well. I do offer a discount on my website. You can pay in Bitcoin as well, if you'd like to do that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. You can find me on Twitter or on my website.
Brilliant. If you enjoyed this conversation, the most powerful thing you can do is share it with someone you love or someone who you think is ready to hear this. A close second is you can donate to support the podcast at CanadianOrangeParty.com. We don't accept dirty, fraudulent fiat, only sats. Wishing you all a great day, and we'll catch you in the next conversation. Ciao.